Hi there, and welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Mike Kegley, and tonight I have with me Kendall Baker of Axios Sports. Before we talk with Kendall, let's do a little bit of housekeeping. Eye on the Illini is brought to you by IlliniGuys.com. We're your one-stop shop for all things Illini. We have a full staff of professionals who are there to cover Illini sports, including co-owner Brad Sturdy and Larry Smith, along with myself, to provide much of the coverage. We also have Kedrick Prince, our director of recruiting, bringing you the best in Illinois football and basketball recruiting. We have Steve Stern analyzing all of the football moves that Coach is doing as he's come on here recently. And we have Connor Kegley handling the previewing of all the basketball action. Please stop by. We have a 7-day free trial, and we have a contest for a 3-night stay at a Maui resort for one of our lucky first 300 annual subscribers. Please give us a try at IlliniGuys.com. So today I have with me Kendall Baker. Kendall has quite an incredible career here. He is runs one of the biggest, if not the biggest, sports newsletters that's out there. And I can tell you, as a personal subscriber for a long time and a big fan of it, he puts out one heck of a product. Kendall, why don't you give us a little bit about what your newsletter is and kind of explain to the folks out there what you're trying to do and how they might be able to have that come to their email every morning.
Sure. Well, thank you, you know, so much for having me on. So Axios Sports is the newsletter I put together every weekday, and actually started it on my own about 3 years ago, and it was called Sports Internet. And you know, my idea, you know, the original idea was, you know, basically, in short, SportsCenter, you know, in a newsletter. I had previously worked in a company called The Hustle, where I started a newsletter there as well, a daily newsletter. And that kind of opened my eyes to the efficiency of the newsletter model. And also to, you know, there's so many, you know, politics, technology, business, all these other industries have so many daily newsletters. And I was looking at the sports space, and there quite literally wasn't anything. I think there was maybe, you know, two or three daily sports newsletters that existed, and they're very, you know, not to criticize, but they weren't great. And so I just saw an opportunity, and left The Hustle, started this newsletter. And, you know, my idea was basically just to build it up. You know, I had some numbers I wanted to hit, and then I was going to raise some money, and then I was going to hire people, and I had a whole plan. And basically within a year, it became obvious to me that it was going to make the most sense to just get acquired. I was starting to get interest. Personally, I was really enjoying the writing even more than I thought I would, and not enjoying the growing a business and doing, you know, finding advertisers and doing all the other things as much as I thought I would. So I really just wanted to, you know, can somebody take that all off my plate and let me focus on this newsletter that I love putting together. And so Axios came calling and acquired the newsletter. And we've since turned it into Axios Sports, and I've been doing it for them for 2 years. And so, like I said, it basically is like SportsCenter in a news, in an email. I definitely try and combine sports with sports business a little bit more than SportsCenter would. So I've always thought that, you know, a sports fan is not necessarily a different cohort than a sports business fan, if you will. I think a lot of sports business news is typically pretty dry and targeted at sports professionals. But a lot of that stuff, if done right, if made interesting and, you know, fun, is actually really intriguing to sports fans. Things like media rights, things like, you know, sports ratings, just the business of sports and kind of combining those two things. So, yeah, I guess the best way to describe it is SportsCenter in an email with some sports business tossed in. You know, I even have top plays every day. And it's super easy to sign up, sports.axios.com, enter your email, and you'll get the email the next day.
Perfect. Well, I will tell you, as somebody who's subscribed for, gosh, at least a year and a half, I feel like when you went on vacation, I felt like it was like, well, wait, where's my news? And the thing I think that sets yours apart from a lot of them is the quality of writing. It's not just a bland, you know, just get the stuff out. You actually have some writing style and a flair that makes it kind of fun to read as well. So I really enjoy that. Let me ask you a question. You know, how many subscribers do you have to the service right now?
So we have about 500,000. So, you know, when I started it, I still remember, but like I said, about 3 years ago, first newsletter I sent was to 36 people, I think it was. And for the first few months there, you know, we were in the low hundreds and still mostly friends and family. And so it is pretty crazy to look back on that. And, you know, there's, you know, social media is one thing, you know, getting followers is very intuitive. You know, as anybody who's ever launched a newsletter and run one knows, it's very difficult to grow, because it's just kind of hard to get people to sign up for something with their email. It's not simple as click a button, you're now following that account. And so it's pretty crazy that we've gotten here, and it's been awesome. And, you know, like I said, coming to Axios has been a great experience in that I've been able to really focus on the product. And so, whereas when I was on my own, I was writing the newsletter every day and also finding sponsors, also trying to grow the list, doing all these other things. Now I've really been able to focus on the product. And, you know, that's really what I love to do. Like, I'm very much entrepreneurial, but I think I've kind of taken that energy and directed it towards the producing of the newsletter. So I kind of look at it on a very micro level. Like every day I wake up, there's a blank page and I got to fill it. And then I send that out, and then it's over, and then I got to do it again. I really enjoy that kind of process of putting this together every day. And it's funny you bring up being on vacation. You know, a lot of people said similar things. Like, in many ways, you know, it was actually probably a net positive going on vacation. I think it actually made people realize how beneficial a product like this is, because once you don't have it, you realize, wait a second, yeah, it is actually, now I have to go, you know, scroll Twitter or do all these other more inefficient things. And that's really the problem I was trying to solve originally. It's just like, let me do that for you. Let me then put it in one place for you and save you time. And, you know, I definitely take the writing seriously. So it's like, it's well-written, it's tight, you know, Axios is all about short and efficient writing. And so, yeah, it's funny. And the other thing is, I'll just add this really quick. Like when I took the vacation, I think this is probably a sign I enjoy what I do. Like, I was like itching to get back, you know, whenever I'm off, I'm like, well, shoot, I wish I could write about that. And you know, I just love sports so much that even when I'm off, I'm watching that stuff, I'm reading about that stuff. And it's just like, man, I wish I could write about this. So it's pretty funny.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I will tell, you know, anybody who's listening to this, you need to sign up because it's great. I read a you know, a couple of different things in the morning, but I don't start my day officially till I've gotten through your newsletter. One of the questions that I wanted to ask you about is so you come out of the University of Pennsylvania in 2013, and somehow you've managed to work for Bleacher Report, ESPN, The Hustle, found your own company, and now go to Axios. How does somebody get through and get opportunities like that? What did you do to earn those opportunities and get in front of these people so that you could build such an impressive resume at a young age?
Yeah, you know, I appreciate that. I think, quite honestly, coming out of college, I was still pretty unclear, you know, as to what I really wanted to do. I think that's a challenge that a lot of people who are really passionate about sports to the point where they're considering maybe pursuing something in the sports field feel, because there's something about sports that almost feels like, particularly if you, you know, you're passionate about it, it's almost like, is this like a serious career? Am I just leaning towards this because this is what I like to do? And it's not, you know, it's I think it's a struggle that a lot of young people go through. It's like, is this really a career? Am I just doing this because I'm passionate about it? But I, you know, I just, it kind of had to get through that. And right out of school, I found a writing program at Bleacher Report. And this was pretty recently after they got acquired by Turner. So they were going through this transition from kind of being a blog to more of a legitimate publication. And I basically got into this writing program that kind of, I guess, taught you how to write in some ways. Not that I didn't know how to write, but kind of taught you how to write for them in that style. And that was just kind of, you know, I wasn't there very long. I didn't get paid almost anything, but it was definitely one of those experiences kind of right out of college where based on the feedback I got, you know, really positive feedback, it was just one of those things like, all right, this confirms that this is definitely not just what I want to do, but like this, something I can do. And it was just great to get that experience. And so then from there, I jumped over to ESPN and actually did something kind of completely different, obviously still in sports media, but I actually worked in TV at ESPN. So I was cutting highlights for SportsCenter, right? Like some days at work, it was like, I would watch an NBA game, cut the highlight at UCN SportsCenter, write a script for that highlight, and then walk that over. Well, cut the highlight and then walk that over to like Scott Van Pelt, hand him the script, right? And then he reads that highlight. So I was, that was what I was doing some days. Other days I was in show meetings, just, you know, discussing segments. So I was very much in TV, kind of working behind the scenes. And it was actually at ESPN where I got originally the idea for a sports newsletter, funny enough. I didn't end up launching it till a few years later, but like that idea was planted in my head then. And it just kind of lingered there. And, you know, that combined with my entrepreneurial itch kind of sent me to San Francisco. You know, I knew that was kind of a place to be in terms of, you know, startup opportunities. And I was really interested in media just generally. And, you know, obviously sports was the dream, but I felt as if like I was passionate enough about media as well to get out of sports media, but stay in media so I could learn how to, you know, start a company, grow an audience, create a product, you know, all these types of things. So that's how I ended up at this company called The Hustle, which was, you know, 4 employees at the time and was, you know, basically a blog. They sent out 2 emails a week that were basically like, here's the articles we published. And long story short there, like within a few months of being there, I pitched the co-founders like on a daily newsletter. I said, we should pivot to this model. Partially because I was fascinated by the model. Also, I just, you know, I knew it would work. I just knew it, and it did. And like I said, I that opened my eyes. And then that idea that had been lingering in my head for so long became not just like an idea anymore. It was like, I actually know how to do this now. And then I went and did it. So that's kind of my journey in short. And it was very much, you know, it looks, in hindsight, it kind of looks like I made all these strategic moves, but really it was more like, you know, having this idea in my head this whole time while I was kind of gaining experience, and all of those experiences ultimately ending up like equipping me with the skills to do what I ultimately wanted to do and ended up doing.
No, that's a great story. I know that my trip took me till I was 53 to decide to start this. So I know exactly what you're talking about, but you're much more efficient than I ever was. You know, I'm sitting here looking at this, and I was just going through to give people an example. You know, every day there's essentially 10 topics, and within each topic, it's very well written. And in some topics, depending on the subject, there'll be 2, 3, 4 links that can take you into more depth if you want to go there. As you mentioned, you had the top plays to watch the highlights. And then there's also a trivia section, which I used to think I was kind of like a sports, you know, wizard. And since this, you've got that trivia there, I've learned some humility as I can't get as many of those as what I thought I should be able to. And just today, just to give you guys an idea, a couple of things that I learned just through scanning through today, I learned what the top 10 mega cities are in terms of population. And New York has dropped down to 11th. And when I was a little kid, New York was number 2 behind Tokyo. Now, Tokyo still has its grip, despite, you know, all the issues it has with Godzilla. Somehow that city keeps growing. I also learned that there is a such thing as coronavirus sniffing dogs. And not only are they a thing, but apparently they're employed by the NFL. So I thought that was fascinating. And as a longtime Super Bowl, you know, aficionado, I've only missed one while I've been alive. I had a meeting where I had to be up in the air to go to a sales meeting. But it's hard to believe there could be a Super Bowl without Bud Light and Coke. And then the most intriguing one was your opening article, which talks about how people use a second screen, i.e. their iPad, their cell phone, when watching games. And I was just curious, because you had a good article there. What do you think the long-term implications are? You're a creative guy. You've found a niche before people knew it was a niche. Do you see any impacts that you know, from your vision, that you think that's going to have on the future of sports and that blurring line between sports and entertainment?
Certainly. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think even, you know, in the article I wrote, basically talking about how, you know, there's an NBA game on and the battle for that screen has basically been won because whoever is broadcasting that game has paid billions of dollars to broadcast it. Okay, so they have the game. Well, who's going to win the battle for the phone, which is what everybody has in their hand while they're watching that game for the most part? You know, there's crazy statistics to support that. Like 90% of Americans are using a second screen. Now, to kind of explain just how we've gotten there already, the vernacular in the media, like the second screen used to refer to the laptop, the computer, mm-hmm. and the third screen was your phone. And even in the last 10 years, the phone is now the second screen. So that's already one kind of transformation, is that the phone is now moved up to that second level. And that's kind of what everybody has. I think what it changes is that, well, there's basically two opportunities to engage somebody simultaneously. But I think there's almost like a bigger picture element, which is there's actually a lot of particularly younger people who are, you know, on social media basically all the time, that are engaging with a league, a team, their favorite athletes, their favorite publishers, more through their social media, I mean, and on their phone than the TV screen. So things like sports media rights, things like how games are broadcast, those are all already changing, and they're going to continue to change, because if the value is shifting from the live game to everything happening on social during the live game, well, then you could potentially see sports rights prices impacted by that over time. I think there you also are already seeing networks changing how they broadcast games, whether it's allowing you to choose a different commentating team, whether it's, you know, we see with some leagues, the NFL being like the last bastion, like a lot of leagues are already shifting content over to streaming. So I think it really is almost hard to list off all the things it's changing, because it's changing everything. And it's really, you know, fundamentally about how people, particularly young people, engage with sports content. And it's just different. You know, there's the NBA is a really interesting case, because they have a very young fan base, and they are also a sport that is it's really driven by individual superstars. And so it's a case where you have a lot of these young fans who follow their favorite players, who move around teams all the time. So somebody who lives in Boston is not really a Celtics fan. Maybe they're a Kemba Walker fan. And then when he goes to a new team in 2 years, you know, they'll like that team, and they like LeBron, you know, but they don't like the Lakers. Like, it's just a totally different way of following sports. And a lot of them don't have cable. And so they're engaging with the NBA through social media, highlight clips, memes, all these other things. And they are gaining a fundamental understanding of what's happening in the league, right? But they're not necessarily tuning into games. So you have people who, you know, follow a whole season in the NBA. They never sit down and watch a full game of basketball, but they can tell you everything that happened that season because they engage with it in a completely different way. So it really is. I could go on and on about this. It's really interesting to me, and I try and touch on these topics a lot. I think sports media is really fascinating, and in many ways, it's actually the forefront of media a lot of times, because live sporting events are one of those last kind of appointment viewings that we have. And so a lot of innovation is happening on that front.
No, I agree with you totally. And I even liken it to sports entertainment, you know, just to, what, yesterday or the day before, the WWE announced that they were going to Peacock for $1 billion, which I think maybe that, you know, sometimes Vince McMahon's a more promoter than he is factual. But I, you know, I was trying to think, you know, their pay-per-views will go over there. The price goes down for your person. It gets cut in half, you know, down to $5.99 from $9.99. And then you can watch all of the three nights of network shows, obviously probably a night delayed. They didn't say exactly how much, but on the Peacock as well. So it does seem like, you know, a lot of these different sporting organizations are trying to find alternatives to the cable cutting that's going on, you know, and as a guy in my age group, I like the quality of picture that I get with my DirecTV. So I keep it, but I'm beginning to think that I now know what a dinosaur would feel like if they were around today, because I think I am one.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you bring that up. So I, you know, back to back kind of media stories, but I top story tomorrow, barring some crazy thing happening later tonight, to give you a little preview, is specifically about Peacock and cable streaming. Like, my take is basically there's this great balancing act going on, where, you know, networks know that streaming is going to win this war. I think everybody knows that it's inevitable, but it's going to take a while. And so you almost have to hedge your bets. Like, you have to, you know, you want your content on streaming because that's the future and that's where a lot of young people are, but you can't just abandon entire generation and generations. And so it's this balancing act of like, how do we put some stuff over here on the streaming platform, but at the same time, we still have it on cable. And it's just, we're going to continue seeing this balancing act. And I think the NFL's, you know, basically going to be that last league standing where you really have huge numbers on cable. And so it'll be really interesting to see what happens there with, you know, Amazon bidding for rights. You know, I could see Amazon, maybe it sounds crazy, but I can honestly see Amazon being the exclusive home of Thursday Night Football in the very near future. And that's a perfect example of like hedging the bets. Like, one game a week is on streaming, not just on it exclusively. You only place to watch it, and everything else is on cable. And 20 years from now, maybe it's all on streaming. So that's another thing to watch, is just this balancing act that networks are having to play, and how the leagues respond as well.
Yeah. And I was actually even wondering down to the level of, you know, college athletics, you know, the Big Ten network, you know, they'll have to probably figure out both the streaming the same way that a lot of these folks are. And I also think that the real untapped area for a lot of these conferences is I don't know if they have the rights to them, but they've got so much history and tradition that if they started rolling out, you know, more of the past games and more of the past teams, I think they could probably really have a lot to stream. But I haven't quite figured out how they're going to play that, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting stuff.
So obviously we're eye on the Illini here, and I know you're a huge sporting fan. Any type of impressions that you get from the Illinois basketball team we have this year, led by Io and Kofi, kind of the 1-2 punch that has been very successful at bringing Illinois basketball out of the wilderness of the late Bruce Weber and John Gross era and back into where we're getting to be a little bit more respected as Illinois fans like myself grew up under people like Lou Henson and even later on when Bill Self was around.
Yeah, no, I watched a bunch of Illinois games this year. I think they're a really fun team. I think, you know, Kofi in particular, I'd put like Luca Garza in this category too, is like that kind of, you know, big man who is dominant at the college level, but because of the way the NBA is changing, is like, for whatever reason, well, not for whatever reason, I guess we understand why, but like, is like underrated as a professional prospect. And so like those types of players, I take great joy in watching them at the college level, knowing that this is kind of like a different somewhat version of the sport where they're still dominant. And it's in many ways, in my opinion, at least kind of unfortunate that there's not kind of like a place for them to dominate in that way at the professional level, just because the game has changed and been big shoot threes and it's just a completely different game. So I really enjoy watching him play. It almost feels like you got to watch him now because he doesn't, you know, he doesn't have much time left. I don't want to frame it too negatively, but you know what I mean? Like, I like watching guys like that play in college. So he's obviously a beast. I think that's the best way to describe him from what I've seen. And I guess like with him and Ayo, like those are these, like, who was the last Illinois basketball player to be drafted? Like, it's been a while.
Myers Leonard would have been when he was drafted by Portland. Right around 2012, athletic, so it's been a while. Superman. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's been a lot. Like, I mean, I guess, you know, it's one way to look at prospects as in terms of their NBA potential. I think it tells you something about them at least. So I think just that fact that they're both very much, you know, on draft in mock drafts, that just kind of tells you their talent alone. And so I've definitely enjoyed watching them. I think my biggest takeaway from the season so far, not just Illinois, but across the board, is I guess outside of Gonzaga and Baylor, it seems like one of, if not like the most wide open year I can remember, and particularly in conferences like the Big Ten. And I guess I'd put the Big 12 there right now. Like those two conferences are just so deep and so dominant that it seems like anybody can win on any given night. So I always enjoy that.
Yeah. And I think you're spot on with that. When you think about like Io is an incredible player, and he may be an actual, you know, a better player, so to speak, than Kofi. Mm-hmm. But Kofi is so physically dominant,
right,
that you have to deal with him, and he's kind of your first issue that the other team has to game plan for.
Yep.
Because it's like the Incredible Hulk in there. And I really wish he would stick around. You hear rumors that he's going to go pro. Mm-hmm. I would love to see him stick around for one more year, because if Orlando Antigua is the assistant coach who handles big men, and he helped get Anthony Davis on his way at Kentucky. And he has really helped Kofi round out his game. And I think one more year in developing that face up 15 footer would really prepare him for the NBA. But, you know, it's hard when you're his age and have the talent level not to want to go out there and see how you compare to the guys in the NBA, even if it might be an uphill battle.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, he does seem like one of those guys that there is a, you know, it's obviously a personal decision, everybody differs, but there is at least an argument to be made for, just going back to what I was saying about fit and just kind of how the NBA has evolved. Like, there is an argument for him to stay, right? Because this is kind of the college basketball is kind of where he can continue to dominate. Not that he won't have a great professional career, but it's like he can be this type of player here, whereas he gets drafted depending on where he goes. I mean, I don't think there's a single NBA team that's playing a different style. I mean, pretty much every NBA team plays the same style now. They all look the same. And so, yeah, I like, again, to use Luka Garza as an example, like same deal. Like he, you know, was one of the better players in the country last year, obviously the same deal again this year. He came back. And so I could totally see that happening, but yeah, I mean, you're right. And I think also going into the calculus of all these guys deciding whether they want to go pro after this is like, I don't, you know, this has been a weird year for them, to put it lightly.
Yes.
And, you know, so many of the benefits of playing in college, you know, that student body support, all just college life being stripped out of it. I wonder if mentally that's changing, you know, perspectives.
Oh, I would think so. One of the co-founders of Illini Guys, Brad Sturdy, he's our Illini expert who's been covering the Illini for 16 years or so. He has a podcast, and he has talked about the price that the players are paying, because they're basically in a bubble. You know, we have Georgie, whose parents are over in Europe. He hasn't seen his family since last March. And that's a big deal. Io, whose parents, you know, literally come to every game and are a huge part of his life. You know, he hasn't seen them since, you know, and had a chance to sit down and talk with them since August. So there's a reason why when you see a player struggling out there, there's a lot more going on than just dribbling basketballs. And the other thing is on Brad's podcast, Sturdy for 30, the latest one had an Illini, maybe not a legend, but he was definitely legendary. Lucas Johnson, he was the hustle guy that was here during the Bill Self era. So six foot seven guy who was always in the middle of every, diving for a loose ball, grabbing a rebound, arguing with the other team's coach. And he's on, and he's one of the funniest guys you'll listen to in sports. And he talked about the lack of crowds. He said, you know, I played off the crowd. I fed off the crowd. I didn't get a lot of energy by dribbling on a court that said Illinois on it, you know, and when you think about it in that perspective, you can see how challenging it must be for these players. And I think that's why we're seeing some incredible upsets where a team will literally, you know, I got to be honest with you, in writing my heat check and Hail Mary column after every game, I had basically buried Coach Pitino up in Minnesota because Illinois destroyed him. And then you wait 2 weeks later and they wipe out teams that beat Illinois. So,
right.
You know, that lack of a crowd, I think, really puts an X factor into who can get up and maintain their enthusiasm and maintain their intensity, you know, for 40 minutes. And these are kids.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, the equation has definitely changed in terms of, you know, home court advantage versus not. And yeah, like it's interesting to think about, you know, what factors, whether it's just, you know, coaching in general, whether it's system, like what factors best allow teams to be consistent when all these other elements are stripped out. Like you look at the teams that have been performing best. I mean, I guess Gonzaga and Baylor are just supremely talented. So it's kind of hard to say. I mean, just look at their rosters. They're just super talented, but you know, maybe look at a few other teams, like what is it about that team that allows them to consistently come out and get, you know, have that energy. And part of me thinks there's something to, you know, just the system that the team runs, that if it happens to be a system that can kind of negate, you know, the inconsistency of energy in a certain night, and you're just like really running, you know, 10 set plays right out of the tip that, you know, get you a few points, even if you're not really, you know, firing on all cylinders yet or things like that. It's just interesting to think, you know, this year and hopefully just this year, it's almost a different game. At least in some things that you're measuring, it's just, we're not going to see this again. It's like they're playing a different sport in some senses.
Oh, I agree with you totally. And I even had some concerns that we would, if I was the NCAA watching a few of the cancellation counts of games canceled going up right now, I would really be thinking, okay, you know, we didn't get all that revenue last year. I mean, there was probably a $600 million gap between the insurance they got and what they normally bring in. I would be thinking maybe we need to take some of that money and pick 80 teams and try to do, you know, a bubble early, help the colleges finance so that we have 64 teams that can play. And I think the NBA certainly showed that if you adhered to the bubble, you can do some pretty, pretty amazing things. But you know, when you hear Michigan stops their sports with, you know, over 10 people with one of the variants of COVID, that's worrisome. And it also is a threat, you know, again, I'm not trying to put it down just to dollars and cents, but that's a threat to the NCAA. And one wonders how many years they can do without their number one revenue producer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it cannot be stressed enough how desperately they need March Madness to happen this year. And I think they're going to do everything they possibly can do to make that happen. It would be disastrous.
Yeah. And as a sports fan, we wanted to see Illinois last year, you know, go through the tournament. And of course, you know, I can only imagine the excitement that a Gonzaga or a Baylor fan have right now with those two teams.
Yeah.
And what a tragedy is probably not the right word, but what a massive disappointment it would be to not get to see them make their attempt at a run.
I don't know if you're a subscriber yet, or if you remember, but I did a mock like tournament last year. Mm-hmm. I used like a simulation engine. Yes. And I'm pretty sure Illinois went to like either the Elite Eight or the Final Four in that.
Yes. I think they went to the Final Four.
Yeah. And then Baylor won.
Yes. Yes. And that was great. And I'll tell you the other thing, to go back to what you did, which I thought was spectacular, is you ranked, and I know you worked maybe with somebody else to help on the stats component, but you ranked the best rosters in the NBA and Major League Baseball for each franchise.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
And Oh my gosh. Every day I was like waiting to see, like, you know, what team is going to be next, you know, and then who did he pick to start and who was on the bench or who was in the bullpen, that type of thing. So I'm hoping that you can, I don't know if you can figure out a way to do the NFL, but
yeah, we've been thinking about that. It's like, do you limit it to skill positions? Cause you know, I don't know how I'm going to rank like the left guards, no offense to left guards.
Yeah.
But no, we've been thinking about that. I mean, yeah. Cause the feedback we got was so great. And so we've been thinking a lot about that. We have some stuff coming down the pipe that I think you'll enjoy potentially doing something like that almost continuously. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. The sports geek comes out in me. But back when I was quite a bit younger, there was a video game called Micro League Football. And for like 15 or 18 years, they would do the picks for USA Today in the Super Bowl. Right. And I was one of their testers. They'd give me a copy of the game. And instead of playing it like a normal human would do, I would take the best year of any franchise, and then I would play a full 16 game season, you know, with the 85 Bears and the 70 Vikings and the 62 Packers, and I would go through and play Super Bowls and see who the best was of all time. So when you started doing that thing, I was hooked. It was like you know, candy every morning. I couldn't help.
Love to hear that.
So you know, one last time before I go through a couple of things, but can you give people the email address so that if they're interested, they can, you know, if they're listening somewhere, they can either jot it down or they can type it in on their cell phone and, you know, get subscribed right now.
Yeah. So it's super easy. sports.axios.com. That'll take you a page where you literally just enter your email, press enter, and you're signed up and you'll get it the next day. So sports.axios.com.
Perfect. Sports.axios.com. I can tell everybody who's listening, it is a fantastic service. You get it the next day. You will basically then want to pass a law saying that Kindle cannot go on vacation. So that was really good. Well, I appreciate
no vacations planned for a long, we took a vacation in December. I don't have any vacation for a very long time. So good time to sign up.
Good. Perfect. Yeah. You know, and just email me before you do, so I can make sure I've got something lined up myself. But I really appreciate you coming on and helping us out. Obviously, we're a new podcast on the block, and we have got a new website. We literally just a couple of days ago was our second week anniversary online. And I do appreciate somebody who's got a track record of success like yourself helping us out.
Of course. Yeah. Happy to come on anytime.
Thank you very much. And of course, this is Eye on the Illini, and this is Mike Kegley. Please take a visit to IlliniGuys.com. We really appreciate anybody who goes out there. And of course, we have the 7-day free trial, and we'd love to have you as a subscriber. And if you sign up for a full year, you could be the one person in 300 who gets the 3-night stay in a Maori resort. Thank you very much, everybody, and have yourself a great evening.